From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Today on the show, groundbreaking for the first park to be built in Milwaukee's new Harbor District happened Friday. We'll get a preview of what to expect once the park is completed.
You'd be surprised how often we get emails and phone calls from people saying, my kid's really into boats. Where can I come down and watch the ships of the port? Now we're going to have an easy answer. We say, come down to Harbor View Plaza, you're going to have the best view of the port right here.
Then we'll find out how a South Dakota and an Arkansas native came together to form a group called Carolina Story.
We camped for a week outside of Asheville. It was one night we were sitting around the fire and we had the guitar and we started writing this song. And we sort of hatched the plan that upon our return to Memphis that we would stop doing things separately and start the band.
And we'll have the latest in our storytelling series, Ex Fabula. Lake Effect Weekend is next. First, this news.
Good afternoon. This is Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. The story of Milwaukee's Menominee Valley over the past decade has been one of successful rebirth. What was once a blighted industrial and former industrial strip in the heart of the city is now filled with new businesses, a state park, and is bookended by a museum and a baseball stadium.
Many in the city would like to see the area designated as the Harbor District be the next redevelopment success story. It's Milwaukee's gateway from Lake Michigan, and it presents almost a blank slate in many ways, or at the very least, it represents an underutilized waterfront.
This past Friday, a significant step towards that redevelopment took place with the groundbreaking ceremony for the first park space in the Harbor District. It will be called Harbor View Plaza. Dan Adams is planning director for the Harbor District. He recently gave WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz a look at the area and explained what it will become.
So when it's complete, people will, come to it down Greenfield Avenue here. You're going to be able to see it from pretty far back. We're going to have some pretty big signage over here. And then next spring, we're going to be installing a very tall play structure that's going to be a shipping container. So it'll be visible, kind of turned on its end, so kind of a tower. So kids will be able to climb up inside it and from on top get a view of the area. So that'll be pretty visible from down the street. And then as you get closer, there's going to be a lot of new plantings, new trees, new native landscaping. There'll be a water feature in the middle.
Sort of a wetland thing?
A little bit. It will have some water in it, and there'll be native kind of semi-aquatic plants in it. And also feeding into that will be a little small water play area where kids will be able to use a water pump to kind of fill a little river area, which they can then dam and play in the water and things like that. And then that flows into the water feature. And then there'll be all sorts of seating, landscaping, and then at the water's edge, when you get all the way down here, is going to be the first canoe kayak launch in the area. It'll be ADA compliant canoe kayak launch, which will allow people to get right down to the water's edge. So even if they're not using a canoe or kayak, it'd be interesting to get down to the water because so much of this area, you're elevated on the top of the dock walls. It's difficult to get that close to the water, and so this would be an opportunity for that.
So how much will you, move into the water itself? Just a little bit?
We won't at all, except for the floating dock. The floating dock will obviously be on the water.
And the reason?
But the site itself just goes up to the dock wall.
And there's a reason for that?
There's a lot of reason for that. Once you cross the dock wall, there's a lot more regulations at play. It gets way more difficult, way more expensive. Not to mention, this is an active commercial shipping area, and so we don't want to take any of that waterway. You can see it's pretty narrow already from here to Jones Island. And so we're just using the space that's available here to get people to the water's edge so they get close enough, they can enjoy the ships, they can enjoy the beautiful scenery, which is funny. 20 years ago, no one would have considered this beautiful scenery, but now people want to come down here and see the activity. The city's heavy lift dock is across the way, so whenever the port's shipping in or out very large cargo, it all happens right there. So this will be, ground zero, the best place to view that. And then, of course, all the loading over there. You can see right now, the Algoma Innovators over there unloading salt, fresh from the Goderich Mine in Ontario, the largest salt mine in the world. So this would be the best place for people to come down. You'd be surprised how often we get emails and phone calls from people saying, my kid's really into boats. Where can I come down and watch the ships of the port? Now we're going to have an easy answer. We say, come down to Harborview Plaza, you're going to have the best view of the port right here.
So people, in terms of access to the place, you have parking, you know, on both sides of the street on Greenfield, this
right.
side of the
railroad tracks. So yeah, all the parking will
checks,
be right
basically.
On the street.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're hoping people will be biking here.
At... Biking, walking, taking the bus. We have, you know, multiple bus lines stop just 3 blocks away here at First and Greenfield, so it's an easy way to get down here. We already have a lot of people that bike down here, especially lunchtime. You come down, a lot of people bike and sit here, and even in the state it's in now, you know, have lunch and watch the boats, but imagine how much more attractive it'll be once it's a functioning, beautiful, attractive park space.
We see this fencing right now.
Right.
Not so long ago, there was a coal pile there.
Yeah,
and beyond that were
ago.
Structures from the old Solvay plant.
Right.
So what's evolving in these spaces?
We have plans in the Harbor District Water and Land Use Plan for a suggested kind of program for what we'd like to see here, which would be a public waterfront. So this park we're talking about is kind of the first toe in the water, if you will, for public access down here, and we're hoping it leads to many more public improvements in the future going down the waterfront here, and eventually part of a larger riverwalk system. Behind that, you know, the plan recommends a mix of commercial office uses, light industrial uses, things like that. The coal pile site, there's been no kind of news as of late of what's going on with that. Behind that, the Solvay Coke site owned by We Energies, there was an announcement,
acres.
Yeah, about 45 acres. Two or three weeks ago, they announced they've been talking to Komatsu, who has been interested in that property, but I think there's still a lot of discussion to go to see if that'll work out. So we're waiting and trying to get information to see, you know, how future uses can kind of fit into the vision put forth by the Water and Land Use Plan that was adopted earlier this year.
So, Dan, how does the creation of this park, how significant is all this to the vision of the, including in that, I think, what is there, 9 miles of...
Yeah, you're right. You got that. 9 miles of waterfront in the district.
Yeah, yeah.
And so out of that 9 miles, the only place where the public can really get down to the water is the county boat launch about a half mile north of here, which is, you know, just a few very similar to this, a few benches and mostly concrete. And then really, there aren't any other public access points in that 9 miles. And so this park is extremely important in that it's going to provide a nice welcoming space for people to come down. Because I think if you go back 3 years to when we started our planning process, we started asking people questions about this area about, oh, you know, what do you know about it now? What would you like to see here in the future? We got a lot of blank stares and shrugs because there was
crazy?
No, right, there's no way for people to come down here. Even people lived a few blocks away said, well, I'm not really sure where you're talking about. And so this park will provide a space to kind of open that conversation up even further. And so while we have this plan, there's still a lot of details to be kind of framed out within that. And so this will kind of be the hook to get people into the conversation further and really experience the space and appreciate the working waterfront that Milwaukee has. So many people, when we talk to them, they think most of this is vacant and not used, and that's not the case. The port is very active, a lot of the businesses around here are active, and so this will provide a space for people to come down and see that kind of dance on the waterfront, the working waterfront that we talk down here, and gain an appreciation for it.
So we have the Riverwalk. And again, you know, we talked about access, about the potential of the public being able to, you know, walk or bike or jog, you know, bigger sections of these 9 miles. Is part of the vision that, you know, perhaps that could be built into the development, again, back where we're looking, where coal used to be stored, etc.?
Oh yeah, one of the most popular elements I think of the Water and Land Use Plan was the proposed Riverwalk,
right,
which would go from where the Riverwalk kind of ends now in the north end of Walker's Point along this whole western shore of the Harbor District and up the Kinnikinnick River, eventually on both sides of the river. We've been talking to property owners about it recently and kind of slowly advancing that conversation. We'll have to get creative with how it goes because there are operations at the water's edge that, you know, you don't want people walking through between certain boats and things like that. But I think our goal is to eventually develop a continuous network throughout this western edge of the Harbor District that provides a public access for people to get down to the waterfront, and it isn't disjointed. So, you know, if you're going for a jog or something, you're not zigzagging back and forth, and it's a pleasurable experience and you can get from point A to point B. And so we're working on the Riverwalk.
And here in the harbor, what is it, like 60% of the land or properties are privately owned by a bunch of people?
Yeah,
and that means
yeah.
negotiating with a lot of,
that is
you
very
know,
true.
Moving parts.
That's
right?
You did your homework, because I think about Jones Island adds up to about 40% of our land area. So the other 60% other than the coal pile site here, is pretty much all privately owned. So yeah, we're following the model of what they did downtown, and then more recently in the Menominee Valley with the Riverwalk. We're pursuing a Riverwalk overlay zone. But yeah, that's kind of a negotiation with property owners and getting everyone to kind of buy in the vision and what it'll mean in the future. And you have to think more longer term, because as you know, the downtown Riverwalk, that overlay was put in, I think, 20 or 25 years ago at this point. And so it kind of built out incrementally over time, and we may have to do that here, although we're hoping to bite off some bigger chunks earlier rather than later, where there are opportunities.
Like where?
Well, right across the street here. I mean, simply because you don't have buildings at the water's edge or anywhere here, and so
it could be incorporated in its redevelopment.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Or for example, the Michaels development, which was recently announced for the former Horny Goat Brewery site.
Right.
That's all their property,
right.
And their plans have a public Riverwalk along their whole water's edge right there, and so I think that'll begin to change the conversation a bit as people understand that, oh, there is a possibility to bring public access to the water's edge down here.
Another percolating project is the Grand Trunk Wetland.
Yes.
And there's access built into that. Eventually these will be joined in some
way.
You
get the vision, Susan. That's exactly it. So right across the water over there is behind those grain silos is the Grand Trunk Wetland.
It's not that far.
It's not that far, but if you think of the future potential Riverwalk, you go down this side of the KK River and you come back up the other side of the KK River, the Grand Trunk would essentially be the north end of that side of the river's Riverwalk. And so, yeah, there's planning going on right now, so even more planning. There's always more to be done. Both for how are they going to finish and actually construct the wetland, which is the $3 million grant the city got to work on that from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, but also how do we connect that wetland to public access in a manner that doesn't detract from the wetland. You got to be careful. You don't want people in there trampling the natural habitat, but you want them to have some ability to experience it so they can appreciate what it is, why it's there, the function it serves. The goal is that we're putting in these different nodes of public access that over time will fill in and connect to continuous network, both for people and eventually for animals, you know, fish, wildlife.
Another focus is the quality of the water that this is, we're sitting in an area of concern, right?
Yep.
Explain what that means and how that factors into the way you're thinking and planning.
So the area concern is an EPA designation for Great Lakes areas where there are certain impairments to the water quality, and so Milwaukee.
Pollution.
Yeah, pollution, things like that. And so, yeah, the Milwaukee estuary of concern covers the inner harbor, the outer harbor, and our three rivers up to a certain point. And so, obviously, when we're bringing people down to the water's edge, we want it to be a pleasurable experience. We don't want people to go down onto our first canoe kayak launch dock and see a bunch of junk floating by or wondering about the safety of the water. And so there's a number of partners that have been working on it for a number of years, and I think it's gathering more momentum about just getting support behind different projects to kind of address those pollution issues or the various impairments related to the AOC. So things like we're working on a project to install a trash wheel on the Kinnikinnick River.
Get to that would be near the Michaels, right?
That would be right basically across the street from
that. So that would be an attraction.
That would be
for people.
Well, it'd be attraction in many ways. I think visually it would be an attraction, but it would be attraction that it would improve the water quality and the aesthetics of the water, thus making a future Riverwalk and public access and Harborview Plaza itself even more attractive in the future when people know they can come down and the water is going to be a pleasurable experience as opposed to, you know, sifting through whatever's flowing down.
So explain where that is, why it's tricky, because it's sort of a bottleneck, isn't it?
Yeah, so the Kinnikinnick River is the smallest of the three rivers that flow into the harbor, and it's the most urbanized watershed. It's 99, if not 100% urban watershed. And so all the runoff that comes off our streets, parking lots, driveways, everything, all ends up in that river. But because it's the smallest...
And the junk with it.
And the junk, yeah. And when I say runoff, it's mostly junk. It's, you know, trash, litter, debris, whatever. And so right at the Beecher Street Bridge, so very close to Michael's development site, so Beecher Street Bridge on the KK River, that is the end of the navigable channel. So boats with motors don't go past that bridge. And there is also an MMSD property right there that would allow us to service a potential trash wheel. So if you put a trash wheel at that site and you have two booms going to each side of the river, that acts as a funnel that would collect all the trash flowing on the surface of the water and funnel it into this trash wheel, which would then dump it into a dumpster, and using the MMSD site for access, we could haul that away to the landfill, thus catching all the trash before it even gets down into the harbor, and hopefully making our waters out here very clean and pristine.
And there is such a wheel
in Baltimore.
Baltimore.
And so in Baltimore they've installed at least two of them, maybe three of them at this point. I know they were working on their third one. It is powered by primarily the flow of the river.
Okay.
So it's a water wheel like you would have seen on an old mill 1,000 years ago, you know, a millstone going around. They also have backup power and solar cells on top of the trash wheel. And so it's all renewable energy.
And the vision is what could be recycled would be recycled out of that.
Ideally,
yeah. It doesn't all go to the landfill.
Right. It would go into the trash stream like we have here in Milwaukee. And so certain things hopefully would get sorted out.
That's not your job, though.
No. We're not. Well, other duties as assigned. You never know. We'll see. So the big success about the trash wheel in Baltimore is obviously it's scooping the garbage out of the riverway. But it's had, and I don't know if this was intended or not, but kind of a galvanizing effect for the community with regard to awareness of water quality issues and just kind of the role that their harbor plays in their community. Because it's become somewhat of a local celebrity, it has very popular social media following. They can actually detach it and it floats around, and so they'll have kind of similar to our Milwaukee Boat Parade here, they have a parade there where they float the trash wheel in the parade and so everyone can wave to it and things like that.
Okay.
So it's really built awareness of water quality issues out there for them, and we'd hope it would do the same thing here. This is ultimately the near south side of Milwaukee's waterfront. This is their lakefront, their access to the rivers and to Lake Michigan, so we want to make sure it serves them as it develops over the coming years.
So that balance of neighborhood, business, building jobs,
yeah.
But with that, you know, people are part of this, not like, oh, you know, the rent is going up.
Oh, we are very, very aware of that. And that's always the kinds of fear, because you need investment for the area to change and to develop. But you also don't want that investment to drive out the people who live here now that could benefit from that investment and the people who have really contributed to the character and identity of the neighborhood now. You got to find that balance where the investment can provide new options and new things and new opportunities without pushing out the people who could benefit from those opportunities. And so that
diversity is a key
diversity
element.
Is extremely important. And throughout the planning process, two things that the community wanted to see from future development and change here in the Harbor District was, number one, access to parks and green space and to the waterways. They only have 1.8 acres of park per 1,000 residents, which is well below the city average of 8.8 acres of park, and then well below some of the lakefront communities in Milwaukee County, which are in the 20s and 30s acres of park per 1,000 residents. So we need more green space on the near south side. So that was a huge priority. And the other thing was jobs. Jobs that would be accessible to people that live in the neighborhoods nearby, which I think providing new jobs in a space that's close to where people can get to would be a win for everyone. It would provide new opportunities for people in the neighborhoods nearby, and then provide a huge labor pool for employers that might move into the area.
Dan Adams is planning director for the Milwaukee Harbor District. He spoke with Susan Benz. The groundbreaking for the area's first park, called Harborview Plaza, took place on Friday. There is a link to more information about the project at WUWM.com.
Stick around after a break. We'll have an in-studio interview and a performance from the duo Carolina Story. Lake Effect Weekend continues in just a moment on 89.7 WUWM.
We're back with more of Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke.
Springtime came with a vengeance this year. The river rose high, the water ain't clear. Springtime came with a vengeance this year. Come on in, the water's warm down here.
The husband and wife duo of Ben and Emily Roberts proudly announces to the world that they've never said no to a gig. The couple has toured for years, attracting fans to their harmonies, their strings, and their lyricism.
They call themselves Carolina Story, but until recently, they didn't have a full-length produced album to call their own. That changed with the release of Lay Your Head Down.
The two were, what else, performing in Milwaukee recently, and they stopped by the Lake Effect Studio to chat with Joy Powers and offer up a few songs, including the title track from the new album.
Though you're hurt, take your burdens and put the load on me. Summertime came, brought me whiskey and tears. Felt enough pain for the next 5 years. Summertime came, brought me whiskey and tears. Take my hand, there ain't no room here for fear. All I can't sleep when you're dead, so I am told. All I know is that I'm growing old. The sins of a man are much too heavy to hold.
Down, that's the title track from Carolina Story's first album. Emily and Ben Roberts are here in studio with me. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
You are Carolina Story, but you actually met in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yep.
So what makes yours a Carolina Story?
Yeah, it's a long story. No, not really. We'll shorten it for radio.
Cliff Notes version.
I'm originally from South Dakota. Ben is from Arkansas. And we met in college in Memphis. And we were both...
We live in Nashville.
Yeah, now so we live in Nashville. It's confusing. But we both were separate singer-songwriters when we first met. And Ben is a lover of the state of North Carolina. Whitewater raft guide out there.
Yeah, he used to be a whitewater rafting guide. And... when I met Emily, I took her on a camping trip there when we first started dating about 10 years ago. And we camped for a week outside of Asheville in western North Carolina. And it was one night we were sitting around the fire and we had the guitar and we started writing this song. And we sort of hatched the plan that upon our return to Memphis that we would, you know, stop doing things separately and start the band. So... that's where it all started.
So that's the Carolina Story.
Exactly. Yeah. I think she said the name on the way home from the trip, and it stuck ever since. So.
So you guys have been playing together for about 10 years, and I read some of your bio. About how long was it after you got married that you went on your first tour?
We got married in June of 2009, and we were on the road. We got married June 13th. We went on a short little honeymoon, and then we were on the road that 4th of July. So,
oh wow!
Like yeah, so as like, soon as we got married, we hit the road. Yeah,
and
so
never
it was
back.
Almost your honeymoon, really.
More or less, yes,
exactly.
How is that? I mean, I think a lot of people, marriage can be such a, you know, really trying getting your feet wet at the beginning can be a little difficult. How was it being on the road?
We dove in. It was like doing a cannonball into the deep end.
We just went right on in.
Yeah.
You know, because we do. We spend, you know, pretty much every waking moment together. And, you know, a lot of couples usually end up arguing in the car. Well, we spend a majority of that time in the car. So we had to make sure we...
Yeah, you get to know each other really, really well. So,
not get on each other's nerves too bad. Although that happens quite a lot.
It does.
So you're just starting off your tour right now.
Yeah, we just.
Is this your first time in Milwaukee?
No, we've played Milwaukee a few times, but it's probably been six or seven easily.
Yeah.
Maybe even 8 years ago that we were here. We've played Frank's Power Plant and a bunch of different places in the city, but we're excited to make our return here.
Nice. Well, you have another song for us.
We do. We'll play a song off the new record called We Were Young Once Too.
This old world would chew you up and spit you out without ever asking a question about how you doing or who you are. Days go by, soon become days gone by. You never get to question time. It comes and goes. Come back, baby, come back, let's rewind. Come back, baby, let's go back in time. You and I, we were young once too. You and I, we were young once too. Baby's cry, a mother's touch in a schoolyard fire, a summer night and the way it smells after the rain fell. Day first kiss and day first dance, the moment when I grabbed your hand and gave my heart. Oh, let's go back to the start. Come back, baby, come back, let's rewind. Come back, baby, let's go back in time. You and I, we were young once too. You and I, we were young once. You come back, baby, come back, let's rewind. Come back, baby, let's go back in time. You and I, we were young once too. You and I, we were young once. You and I, we were young once too. You and I, we were young once.
I really wanted to say two right at the end of that.
Yeah, we just leave it out.
We tricked you.
So that was We Were Young Once, too, from Carolina Story. They're here in studio with me. I believe that is also from your new album, which it's really your first album. Why after, 10 years playing together, why an album now?
Well, we've recorded and self-released EPs and things like that over the years. And for this album, we decided to take half of the songs are older songs that we recorded before, but we felt like they didn't really get the fair shake that they deserved, and then the rest, the other half are newer songs. The album kind of encapsulates our 10-year journey. That's what the album, sort of the ups and downs of that and finding our way.
Yeah, it really is. It's just about perseverance because, from the beginning, we've been a DIY band. We've done everything ourselves. And just in the last year, though, we had a label come along and say they wanted to be a part of the project. And just you know, it finally gave us wings a little bit, and we got to really, like Ben said, give these songs a second chance. And then
we really, you know, like we said, we've been traveling together and doing this for 10 years, but there was really about a 2-year period there where we were on a little bit of a hiatus. Emily gave birth to our son. He'll be 4 next month, and we actually have a 10-month-old daughter as well. And when she gave birth to our son, we kind of decided to pull back the reins, and, you know, she wanted to be home and start cultivating a family. And so I was actually teaching and coaching 4 sports and working at a bakery, and, you know, just that was sort of the way life was taking us, you know, having to do what we needed to do to keep food on the table. And I had all my grad school applications ready to go last year. I was getting ready to, you know, life was really taking us down another path, and our label came in the picture sort of at the 11th hour and said, we want to work with you. And really, like Emily said, I mean, kind of gave the band and us a second life, a second chance.
Yeah. So if you listen to the whole album, it really just is about that, just that perseverance of just like never giving up, you know, attitude.
Not really knowing where to turn, but knowing that, you know, the only way is forward. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, in your label, you're the first Americana band that they've signed.
Yes. Yeah, so they're typically a country label, you know, which isn't really our cup of tea, you know. But they're when we walked in the door, you know, they just felt like it felt like family. And you know, they didn't really know where to put us. You know, we're not pop country or whatever. So, you know, upon, you know, wanting to work with us, they decided, you know, let's start an Americana imprint. So, yeah, we're the Lone Ranger there right now. Hopefully they'll add some other artists and bands.
When it comes to Americana, it seems like a label that's put on a really wide array of artists and kind of styles. So how do you define it for yourself? What do you think of as being sort of the characteristics of at least your kind of Americana?
I think, you know, Americana is such a wide brush stroke, you know. I mean, country, blues, everything sort of falls under that umbrella. And I inevitably think it's a good thing because it's a platform for authentic music that comes from the heart, you know. Not that other genres aren't, but, you know, when compared to sort of today's country radio and songs, you know, to me, Americana is the original what country music was and is still.
Yeah.
So, you know, they just put another name on it.
It's coming out in the general public, too, I feel like, you know, where it's, you know, it used to be kind of an underground scene, but now I feel like it's kind of surfacing to the, to another level. And it's just exciting to hear other Americana acts just kind of making their way. And people, I think the audience loves it, you know. They love that place of authenticity and just seriousness.
Yeah, songs from the heart, you know.
What are some Americana bands who you've seen coming up in, you know, recent years that have you really excited about the genre?
I mean, you know, Jason Isbell is a big influence, and I think he's a big influence for a lot of, you know, singer-songwriter type artists. And, you know, I mean, the rise of Stapleton and Sturgill Simpson and, you know, a band, you know, Dave Rawlings and Gillian Welch.
We're big fans of them.
And yeah, Brandi Carlile. We've been following her music for a long time, and seems like she's just now kind of getting some of the credit that she deserves, you know. And even newer bands like, you know, Margo Price and, you know, not newer bands. I mean, she's been doing it in Nashville for a long time. But the Milk Carton Kids, I mean, I could go on. Just seeing those bands and artists kind of starting to get some of the recognition they deserve is encouraging, you know. I think the pendulum is starting to swing back a little bit.
All right, well, you have one more song for us, also from the new album.
Also from the new album. This is a song called You Who Makes the Storm Break.
It's been raining cats and dogs in the halls of my heart for days. Every now and again a sliver of light breaks through the Even if I don't know it yet, I know you're placing bets on me. The sight of madness has held my hand for so long I can't see. It's been one whole calendar year of full-blown misery. And even after all that comes to pass, you're loosening the grasp the darkness has on me.
Ben and Emily Roberts are Carolina Story, and they spoke with Joy Powers on a recent trip through Milwaukee. Our in-studio session was engineered by Jason Reavy.
You make the light take. You alone, for goodness sake. It's you makes the storm break. You makes the storm break. I've been marking my words on the walls of this hotel of a heart for years. Every time I go to clean the rooms, they're all occupied by fear. And even if I don't know it yet, I know you're placing bets on me. It's you. You make the light take. You alone, for goodness sake. It's you make the storm break. You make the storm break.
We'll take one last break and then have our storytelling series Ex Fabula. Lake Effect Weekend returns right after this on Milwaukee's NPR.
Two, one.
Welcome to Ex Fabula!
True personal story.
Ex Fabula!
Ex Fabula is a Milwaukee nonprofit committed to strengthening community bonds through the art of storytelling.
And it is time for Ex Fabula Radio once again, part of Lake Effect Weekend, every weekend on WUWM. I'm Bruce Winter. Leah Delaney is back this week, and good to have you back.
Yay! It's good to be back.
With your stories on this week's theme, which is?
It's inspired by art. So do you remember a few weeks ago we'd been talking about the Sculpture Milwaukee and Ex Fabula partnership we did? We did walking tours.
Yes.
Hey, I went to one of those events and it was so much fun and interesting and it was inspiring. So the whole deal was that we had two of our Ex Fabula storytellers, Elaine Molly and Sean Mitchell, who basically led this group down Wisconsin Avenue. And we stopped at different sculptures and they talked about stories, their personal experiences and like what those particular sculptures kind of meant to them in their own words.
So the sculptures were like a launching point for them?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to air a few of those stories and then we'll also talk about season 10 in a couple moments as well.
Okay.
So let's start out today's show with a story from Elaine Molly. A particular sculpture by Bernard Vernet that's located on 4th in Wisconsin. It's called 97.5 degrees arc by 9. It's a giant one by the convention center. This one sort of has a wave feel to it. So let's listen to Elaine Molly's story.
So I walked past this sculpture and I thought, it's a wave. It's a wave. I love, love, love the Pacific Ocean. I could spend days and days and days just sitting on the rocks watching the waves that are ever changing. No two wave is ever the same. A few years ago, I was there with my six-year-old grandson, Noah, and he and I had taken a walk to get some ice cream, and on the way back, we were watching the waves. And I was feeling like this was such a perfect, perfect, blissful moment. And I really wanted to capture it in my mind forever, in my mind's eye, in my heart. And it occurred to me that, you know, we can't, this is why we write. This is why we take pictures. This is why we tell stories. It's an effort to permanently embed those peak moments in our minds and hearts forever. A few years ago, I started working for an organization called Time Slips, and we do creative storytelling with people who have dementia. And it's not about trying to help them reminisce. It's about using our imaginations and having shared moments of creativity together. Yet, as far along in their dementia journey as people are, you'd be surprised how much of themselves creeps into those imagination stories. Pieces of their culture, names of old school chums, picnics from a long time ago just find their ways into the stories. And it's taught me a lot. It's taught me a lot about the impermanence of memory and how futile this notion is to try to capture things. It's most important to live in the moment. I mean, have you ever had like the perfect romantic evening and then the next year you try to recreate that? Same restaurant, same time. You might even wear the same clothes, but it never happens the same ever, ever again. So that day when I stood with Noah holding his hand on the cliffs by the shore watching the waves, I said, "Oh, Noah, this is the perfect moment. I'm going to remember this forever and ever." And Noah belched a little and said, "Me too." I said, "Really? You're going to remember this day forever and ever and ever?" He said, "I'm remembering it right now."
And that was Elaine Molly's story. Definitely live in the moment. I love those words.
I love that when, how does she put it? Like, no two waves in the ocean are the same, mm-hmm. and no two moments in life are the same.
Yeah.
So live in this moment right now.
Right. No recreating moments that had passed. Make some better memories. And
great attitude. I like that. Yes.
Totally. All right, we're going to jump into our second story from Sean Mitchell. This is when we were walking towards the end of the route. The sculptor is Sanford Biggers, and the name of the sculpture is Seated Warrior, and that's right on Jefferson in Wisconsin. Here is Sean Mitchell.
It's a sculpture by Sanford Biggers. The name of the sculpture is Seated Warrior. Now, Seated Warrior makes me think of all the veterans I know, my friends, my family, other people I know who are veterans. But for me, the Seated Warrior in my family, my grandfather, Robert Glenn, a World War II veteran, right? And he's the reason I joined the Navy in the first place. We share something that his other two sons didn't share when they served. Now, I have to tell you, my family has a long history in the military. Someone in my family, more than, you know, one or two of us, have served in this nation's conflicts since the Revolutionary War. So it's a tradition that we carry on. My grandfather is the one that we all look to, though, as the veteran, the seated warrior of our family. In 1941, as a 26-year-old man, he joined the Navy. A little formal education, four kids, a wife, right? And he needed to feed them and shelter them. We shared a special bond because my grandfather and I graduated from the same boot camp and were stationed at the same duty station, our first duty station. When I graduated from boot camp, my 70-year-old grandfather stood for 20 minutes saluting me as I graduated. In 1941, when he entered the military, however, it was still highly segregated. All right, so him and many other young black males joined the military were moving ammunition. Came about 1944, I would say, you know, he says June or July of 44, he's getting ready to re-enlist. And they're sending him to a base in right outside of San Francisco, Port Chicago. He heard his name called and he was told to come to his commander's office. Got to his commander's office and would explain that you had a child in February of this year. That made it your fifth child. There's a program in the military at the time that if you had five children or you were the last surviving male of your family, you were discharged. So he was discharged and he got a chance to go home and became an entrepreneur later on. The funny thing about that is that in July just a little while after he leaves the military, the Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor. And so things ramp up. In that same port he was going to be stationed at, they were loading munitions July 17th, 1944. And something went wrong. 300 or 400 men lost their lives instantly. I thought about the fact that that could have been my grandfather. And without, you know, I wouldn't have had the role model. I joined the military when I was 17. You know, I dropped out of high school and I felt like I was completing my family's destiny. It's what we do. But without him, I wouldn't be a seated warrior and no one else in my family would be a seated warrior. And for that reason, I salute all the seated warriors and all the military members in your families as well.
And that was Sean Mitchell's very touching story. And, you know, just a quick shout out. Thank you to all of the veterans, mm-hmm. everybody who's serving now, and all of the warriors, whether you're seated or not. Thank you for being those agents of change here in Milwaukee. So we do have another season of Story Slams coming up. Did you hear?
I heard about that. Yeah.
We've talked about it enough.
I think maybe here.
Maybe here. Well, good. Because season 10, I can't believe it. Seriously. Yeah. I know I say this before every season. I'm like, oh, I can't believe it's been another year. But season 10, 10 years in the making, and we're not going anywhere. We have so many great events lined up. The first one's going to be on September 14th. We're going to be back at Garfield's 502. We do love Garfield's 502. And we're just want to make sure everybody has got their season memberships like on their mind. And if you want to be the first on stage with your own generation story, definitely sign up for our first public storytelling workshop for season 10. And that's going to be on September 9th. So you can get all warmed up before the first slam of the season.
Get your training in.
That's right. So before we start the training, let's listen to another story, our last story of today's show. We're going to go back to Elaine Molly. She told this story, and it was inspired by a sculpture called Liberty. And it's the one on Wisconsin. It's right in front of the old Grand Theater. It has the arm holding the basketball. I don't know if you've seen that right on Wisconsin Avenue. It's by Hank Willis Thomas. Let's listen to Elaine Molly.
Well, in planning for this tour, we walked up and down Wisconsin Avenue looking at these sculptures many times, as you can imagine. And I completely ignored this one many times because it doesn't have much to do with me. But I did think, I expected that everyone will expect that my friend Sean here to be the one to tell the story. After all, this is basketball, the Harlem Globetrotters specifically. And, you know, it just didn't speak to me. I'm not part of professional sports. I mean, people are happy to have me as a spectator, but even in my most athletic prime, we were never invited to participate in sports at this level. A few years ago, through women's organizations, I met a woman named Burnell Hooker, who started a group called IOU Sports, Images of Us Sports. And her goal was to encourage more women and girls to be involved in sports, to play sports, to seriously consider sports careers. And Burnell asked me, Elaine, what's your sport? I said, I don't have one. She said, come on. I said, I golf once in a while. I exercise, but that's not a sport. And Burnell pressed me further. She said, well, what was your sport when you were a girl? And then I remembered. Oh, yeah. I used to play baseball, softball, when I was a kid, all summer long in the alley with all the boys in the neighborhood. And I was really good. I mean, I could play every position. When it came to picking teams, I was always the first one picked. I loved the crack of the bat as it jettisoned the ball into the air and I'd go sliding into home base. It was so much fun for me. I loved it. And then school started. But the next spring, when it came time to try out for the local team, I grabbed my glove and I rode my bike down to the tryouts, assuming that many of these boys whom I played with all summer would welcome me. Not so much. They threw everything they had at me. their balls, their bats, their gloves, and they screamed that I must be a lesbian. I rode my bike home in tears. I got little compassion from my parents or friends. They said, "What did you expect?" And that was it for me. I gave up. I never attempted to be involved in any kind of sports again. And then in 1973, Billie Jean King beat Bobby Riggs in tennis, and I felt vindicated. And since then, I'm so pleased at how much progress we've made in women in sports. But I know that one of the problems is we all need to support women's sports, right? Women need to support women's sports. We got to be there for women. Thank you.
And that was Elaine Molly's Girl Power in Sports story.
She is so absolutely right, because back in the day, there was nothing for an athletic young girl to do in high school except be on the synchronized swim team, and that was about it.
Pom-poms.
That was about
maybe
it.
Maybe some color guard. Yeah.
There was nothing for you, so.
Yeah, and now girls are playing. They're
everything.
In the football or whatever. They're doing their thing, you
right,
know?
Exactly.
Girl power.
It's so good. So
yeah,
great.
So
yes.
Good. Oh, another thing that's great is season 10. It is right around the corner, September 14th at Garfield's 502. Definitely go to xfabula.org to get your tickets for that. And to warm up for that, we have our public storytelling workshop for season 10 set up for September 9th. The theme is generations. Let's get out there. Let's start telling, Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to hear these stories again, share them with family and friends, or look at pictures, it's all at WUWM.com. And we are here every weekend during Lake Effect Weekend about this time. So check us out every weekend. Thanks
Yay.
A lot.
All Thank right. you. Bye.
Xfabula is a regular feature on Lake Effect Weekend, and it wraps up another edition of the show. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thank you so much for making us a part of your afternoon. Lake Effect Weekend airs every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 4 right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Keep listening. All Things Considered comes your way next. It's 4 o'clock.